Fun and Dirty comes from listeners like you and the Tampa Bay Times. The Pulitzer Prize winning newspaper is available around the Tampa Bay area and online at tampabay.com. Thanks to the Tampa Bay Times for their support.
How's it going?
Over the next 2 hours, you'll be able to hear from the 14 candidates who are all hoping to fill the District 5 City of Tampa Council seat left vacant by the sad and recent passing of Councilwoman Gwen Henderson. Early voting kicking off on September 4th, and Election Day is September 9th. So now is the time to hear what these candidates have to say and make your educated decision. We've got a large number of candidates, so we've decided to split this group of 14 up into two groups of seven. They're arranged alphabetically, so we've got the A through E group here, and the next hour will be the latter group. Each group will come in separately for an hour and get a mix of questions. Our senior reporters, Mitch Perry from the Florida Phoenix, and Ray Roa from Creative Loafing will be asking the candidates questions. And each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. Our timer will be Jason Marlowe, who's my co-host on Down and Dirty. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
If any other candidate's name is invoked in a response, I'll give that candidate an extra 15 seconds to respond or rebut. I'm really sorry today we're not going to take phone calls due to the large number of candidates and lots of questions. In the unlikely event that we have a little bit of extra time at the end of the show, the candidates will do a 30-second closing statement. All right, everybody ready? We're going to start with a 1 minute opening statement from each of the candidates who will tell you who they are and why the voters should vote for them next month. We'll start with Albert Cook.
Good morning, listeners. My name is Albert Cook. I'm a longtime D5 resident. I've served at the neighborhood association level. I've also been appointed by the mayor, chief of staff, and chairman of the city council to various boards. I believe in affordable housing, bringing jobs to the Tampa Bay area. Of course, great jobs to Tampa Bay area that includes benefits. We want to make sure that our transportation system is directly reflective of what we're doing in our neighborhoods. And I want you to vote for me because I'm the man for the job. I'm for working class families. Working class families are the foundation of our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert Cook. Ariel Amira Danley.
Good morning, listeners. My name is Ariel Amira Danley. I'm born and raised in District 5, 35 years of lived experience. For those of you that don't know, the late Councilwoman Gwendolyn Henderson is my mother. I found her on the morning of June 10th around 7 a.m., so I've been running this race ever since. The reason why I stepped up is because we deserve real results in District 5s. Families deserve homes they can afford, streets that don't flood, and opportunities that let our neighborhoods thrive without losing the people who built them. We can achieve that through concrete commitments from sidewalks to stormwater, fighting for training and continuing to expand equity for our small businesses, and for advocating for a budget that loves us back, because we're not asking for favors. Taxation without representation leaves us voiceless. My name is Ariel Amira Danley. I'm asking for your support. Go out to vote on September 9th. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Danley. Allison Hewitt.
Good morning, Allison Hewitt, hewittwilldoit.com for my information. I'm a third generation East Tampa resident, and I am running to be the District 5 representative with a platform of empowering neighborhoods, economic development that includes support for small businesses to increase wages and jobs, and to be able to have affordable housing and accountability, to make sure that as we are as city council creating the budget and ordinances and policies, that we do that in the best interest of District 5. I ask you to consider me because I have over 25 years of experience in government, so I understand how the ordinances, the budget, and the laws work to make sure that our administration works for us. HewittWillDoIt.com. Please vote September 9th.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Audette Bruce.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning. Again, my name is Audette Bruce, AudetteForTampa.com. I've been in Tampa since 2012, and I am continually impressed by the resources, the people, and the place itself. It has been an incredible benefit to me and my family, and we've been in District 5 since 2017. My goal is to amplify what is already here and to be the voice for our neighborhood. I bring a background in United Nations, state government, and even federal organizations. I want to bring that experience and know-how, not only the know-how, but also just the ideas that come from all over the world into Tampa to its benefit. And I believe that I can be the voice for District 5.
Thank you, Ms. Bruce. Carrie West.
Good morning. This is Carrie West, and I've been a resident here in Tampa since 1980. I think that I can bring a lot of effort to the position of District 5, as I've been in business for over 45 years as a local businessman. I've also been on the Barrio Latino Commission, and I've been appointed out there as the Ybor City Board. And I've had a lot of other opportunities to be working with the city in the historical position of housing. I've also been on a lot of the other avenues of working with kids in the homeless efforts of in Hillsborough County and also in Ybor City. I've also had a lot of opportunity to go out, and I do work with the efforts of housing. And I want to make sure that we do have a good housing, as I live in Gary. But we used to live in the old area of West Tampa. So I do know the efforts and areas of all the concerned in the areas up there.
All right. Thank you, Mr. West. Ashley Dudney.
Good morning, y'all. My name's Ash Dudney, and I should have brought a jacket. Y'all keep it crisp in here. But, I appreciate you having me on. I'm just at this juncture in the race, I wouldn't worry about me winning too much. I'm just here to offer some perspective on occasion. I'm still educating myself an awful lot through this process, meeting some awesome people. So I'm just happy to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Dudley. And last but not least, Elvis Piggott.
I'm Elvis Piggott, electelvis.com. Been pastoring here for 19 years. Running for District 5, just to make sure that we have a seat at the table, making sure that we have someone that can advocate. We understand that the budget of the mayor will be already passed before we take the seat. And so therefore, we need a strong advocate, someone that will fight to make sure that things will get done within District 5, making sure that with all the CRAs that has been created and the CRA money that is out there, that East Tampa get to benefit from the CRAs, and not just East Tampa, but Cephas Falls and different other parts of our area. We have been overlooked, we have been mishandled, and therefore it's time for us to celebrate our glorious past but embrace our promising future. I'm Elvis Piggott, and I'm asking you for your vote, not on September 9th, but right now, because vote by mail ballots is already out.
All right, thank you, Elvis Piggott, and thank you to our candidates. Candidates, before we get started, I just wanted to say a few more things. For one, we're not taking phone calls, so I see a phone ringing here. Sorry, we're not going to take calls during the next 2 hours. Next thing I wanted to let everybody know is you all will be answering, Mitch will be asking the next question. All of you will be answering. But do your best to try and come up with something original, because you've been to a lot of these debates, and everybody after a while says the same thing. I agree. You know, let's spice it up a little bit. Listen carefully, because Mitch is probably only going to ask this question once. And we'll start the first one with Ariel Amira Danley and Mitch Perry from the Florida Phoenix. You're up.
Good morning. So let's begin with stormwater repair. Mayor Jane Castor has a plan to spend nearly $25 million in stormwater spending for the operation and maintenance of the existing system, another $14 million for new construction and or enhancements. But some members of the community say the city should focus on basic upkeep, like sweeping streets and cleaning debris from clogged drains, pipes, and ditches. What would your priority be when it comes to this issue?
Thank you for the question. Flooding shouldn't define life in District 5. East Tampa's CRA plan mentions stormwater management and even dreams of turning ponds into environmental parks, but gives us more of a wish list than a work plan. And over in Channelside, sure, they built a vault to dump stormwater into the Ybor Channel, but their strategic plan barely talks about prevention. So let's change that. Maybe launch a public project tracker with real timelines and actual dollars. Fix the worst flooding spots first. Bundle sidewalks and drainage work with repaving to stretch every penny, and make sure that developers pay their fair share through impact fees.
Thank you, Ms. Danley. Allison Hewitt, same question.
Thank you. First, there needs to be an actual plan for management and upkeep. And then that way, the different neighborhoods will understand what will happen in an area and what to expect as far as maintenance. Because you cannot make sure that what you're putting in and creating with those dollars is in the budget. It needs to be maintained, but what is going to be the impact if what's existing in there is not maintained? So first, I would make sure there is a business plan and a plan for maintenance for existing, and that is very transparent and that the community knows that. And then it'll be able to have an explanation for how does that new money, new dollars, impact what is existing. And also make sure that as we are developing, that we are including in those costs to be able to upgrade. Because in East Tampa, they put the pipes programs down, but they did not put it in conjunction in we may include density. So is that going to be a waste of money pulling up the pipes you just put down there to now we may include some multifamily? So planning is going to be important and crucial.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Aldette Bruce, same question, stormwater.
Well, to add to the conversation, I think one thing we also need to consider is how are we empowering and putting the onus on construction and builders, developers in our area to make sure that they're not contributing to the problem, but that they're actually ameliorating it. You know, we've all seen in the areas where there's a lot of construction, the flooding gets worse. And it's meant to be maybe a short-term problem. But the reality is that for families who are encountering that, it's not short term, it's immediate and it's urgent. So if we're not, as the city, enforcing codes, enforcing ordinances that ensure that not only are they paying their impact fees, their, you know, the blood money for it, but that they're also really ensuring that their processes and procedures are ensuring that we're not going to see increasing flooding on the streets due to the construction that they're in the middle of.
Thank you, Ms. Bruce. Carrie West.
Well, on the stormwater situation, we do have a problem in Tampa, and that is the old and how old the infrastructure of the situation of a lot of the community is, and especially here in East Tampa that we live in right now. Now, we have a variance all the way up there from down there in the Channelside area, now which is brand new construction, brand new development, to all the way up to Busch Gardens on the east area of Tampa in the District 5 area. So when we start seeing areas out there that really need stormwater helpage, and that's going to be a very big, strong area, but one of the things out there that we see is the stormwater, kind of the sewage areas in the backup and keeping it clean. Last year, it was right at the end that they kind of cleaned up the area out for the stormwater for getting ready for the hurricane season. So we have a lot of area to work on, and we have a lot of development, but developers are at fault also.
Thank you, Carrie West. Ash Dudney?
I mean, the planet's not getting any colder and storms aren't getting any weaker. So if the city thinks that they can, you know, use half-assed measures either way is ridiculous. The time for a lot of this was 10 years ago when we knew these conditions were coming. So between infrastructure and, yeah, things as simple as debris cleanup, you know, it is a two-pronged approach that both deserve and need equal attention.
All right. So, Debbie, thank you very much. Aldous Piggott.
So as I'm talking...
Great question.
Well, why would he hear me? He said he heard me talking in here. He can hear me talking.
I wanted to basically talk about responsibility
and accountability. I'm in Studio One.
One thing about
and none of our mics are on.
We understand that we are Florida, and we know that this is going to, we have storms coming our way, and we can't just wait until these moments come before we start planning. And we need to make sure that we have the responsibility to make sure things are executed. What is necessary is a strong advocate to do follow-up, making sure that these things, it's not that we're just planning, but making sure that the plans is being executed. And so I think what will be very important for me will be sitting in the seat that when we finish talking about how much money we're obligating and delegating to these projects, making sure, because when we look at these storms, we look at people's lives are being destroyed because of these measures, and these things, measures not being executed, and us not taking advantage of where we don't have a storm coming. We should be working on these measures year-round. And so if I'm your elected city councilman, I'll make sure that we're not just sitting planning without execution. So we need to make sure that we're executing and doing what we need to do.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pigott. And last one on this question, Albert Cook.
Hi, Albert Cook, Leadership in Action. I think that it's a combination of the citizens and the mayor's plan. We have to start with what we do as citizens. I read that we took 12,000 tons of debris out of our system, our drainage system and stormwater system. That is a lot of stuff that we could have taken out and put into the trash or cleaned up. I also took I sat in on a meeting with the director of stormwater, and he was talking about something as simple as our curb system is actually the artery for all drainage in the city. So when you go outside your door and you see the water running down the curb, that is a major artery for water relief. We have to train our citizens to respond efficiently. Of course, we have to enhance the drainage system, flood barriers, update infrastructure to manage flood water, adding flood... Oh, okay, thank you very much.
Okay. All right, great answers. Thank you, candidates, and all of them were very original. Ray Roa, I think you're...
Actually, no, it's back to me.
Back to Mitch.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go back a little bit in time here, but we're also going to talk about police relations with the community. The state essentially removed cities from having citizen review boards to provide some accountability over local police last year. Tampa had created one back in 2015, led by former District 5 council member Frank Reddick, that was somewhat controversial. First of all, just are you familiar with that CRB? Did you think it was effective under the constraints it was under, or was it ultimately ineffective? Just your thoughts about that, if you do have any.
Allison Hewitt.
Yes, the CRB, I believe, was effective. One of the challenges that we have between city government and the boards is actual effective training to be able to have clear direction on what are the areas they need to be able to address. And so I think that if we continue to have a conversation with the community, especially before incidents happen, after incidents occur, and then post and see what are their opinions on how we addressed it, we can still have a citizens review board. If we have accessible meetings, we have the town halls, or we are out in the communities. But it also comes from making sure there are clear and concise directions for what we'll be talking about, what are the expectations, and then we can have clear results. As long as we are communicating and that we are providing information and it's transparency and accountability.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Aldette Bruce.
I think anytime you can create forums for conversation and for communication, it's excellent. You know, even there's been a number of people over the years who've said that having the UN is a waste of time because it doesn't do anything. But the reality is that it's a public forum that allows these different actors to speak. And so creating a community review board or other such options that perhaps the state will allow at least gives us an option to have community leaders speaking with police in an informal or even formal setting that gives them a chance to present their issues and to ask, you know, the real questions that are underlying some of the ongoing problems between the groups.
Okay. Kerry West.
Great question, and the fact that I really agreed with having the board and also having the group. But one of the things that was there was that it was uncertain exactly how far it went. And that was coming down from the governor and also from the Council of Ethics. But what happened, I think, is we have to have the city attorney kind of go through that and present that prior to, because I think that needs to be brought back to the council and also being brought back to Tampa. And the council needs to address that because we do have a lot of issues that need to be addressed as the openness and also the transparency. I agree in that totally. But we have to bring that back to the council and, again, address it for the community. It's a very good opportunity to have.
Thank you, Mr. West. Ash Dudney.
It's remarkable how much we're not allowed to do thanks to the state, which is ironic, to put it the least, in the free state of Florida. Yeah, I think it's absurd that we don't have any form of review board at the moment at all. You know, at the end of the day, a cop mayor is also going to do cop stuff. So, you know, that's worth noting in the current state we're in. One thing I would point out is I would really love if our city would take a nod from the Louisville Metro Police Department, because in the midst of their protest in 2020, they finally sat down with protest leaders and started setting up, you know, cuts and conversations at barbershops and really focused on community policing, which is something that I've heard this entire process is something that we would really appreciate to feel like we actually have some form of connection with our police department.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dudney. Elvis Piggott.
A great question, Mitch Perry, because that's one of those issues that I had dealt with. To talk about that, to just go back into the basics, 2015 with under Councilman Frank Reddit, that came when it stemmed from our Bob Buckhorn was our mayor at that time, and it stemmed from Biking While Black. That was an issue. That was the reality of where it come from. But often we have to keep in mind that we can have these boards, but when you put no teeth in them, it means nothing. It wasn't effective. It was not effective due to the limitations of the structure. They did not have the ability to push for investigation. They did not have the ability to do many things. And so really, you have to keep in mind also that Bob Buckhorn was the mayor, but Jan Castor also was the chief of police. And so when we look at it being completely gone, our mayor today is Jan Castor, who was the chief of police then. And so when we deal with things of these matters, we have to make sure that we understand that we do need accountability and we do need community policing, but we need to take the brakes off of them if we're going to make these things actually be legitimate.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Piggott. We've got Albert Cook.
That's a great question, Mitch. Albert Cook, Leadership in Action. Mitch, I was appointed by the mayor to the Citizen Review Board. I sat on the review board, so I know exactly what went on. We reviewed closed cases. So that means that a case could be closed back as far as I've saw 3 years. But the great thing was, it was amazing what you were hearing at these meetings and how the police were behaving. But more importantly, it was important how Chief Burkhardt responded to these gentlemen. There were firings, suspensions, desk duty. I mean, Burkhardt was not messing around with these guys. But there's some things that I thought that we could do better. Why not review cases that were closer to when they were closed? Because if you get involved in an open case and we're in it, they're investigating, it causes confusion. So that's one of the things I would say, that we would get that information sooner than later. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. And last one on this question is Arielle Amira Danley.
Yes, thank you, Arielle Amira Danley. First of all, rest in peace to Councilman Frank Reddick, and thank you for his service. We always have to acknowledge our elders and the work that they, and the foundation that they laid for us, and so we're grateful for that. The Citizens Review Board is an imperative arm in our community. It gives people, the most important part of this city, the heart of this city, a seat at the table when it comes to policing. It reviews cases and policies and tends to improve transparency and trust. It's about oversight and accountability, and the people absolutely need the opportunity to do that. It can be reviewed so that we can understand what the boundaries are, what the power the Citizen Review Board actually has is, and then go ahead and make a thoughtful board where we can actually impact change and move the needle. So thank you for the question.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Danley. As an aside, I served with Frank Reddick, and when Goods and I got onto city council, we took the existing CRB ordinance and we actually tried to build it up and make it stronger. And we ultimately reached, did that, and it was going in front of the mayor, and then the governor and the state of Florida decided to shut it down statewide. So that was a little frustrating. Who's up next?
And if you're just tuning in, you are listening to WMNF Tampa. You hear John Dingfelder's voice. That's because the Down and Dirty is on right now. But we've also combined with the Skinny here to do a two-hour candidate debate surrounding the race for Tampa City Council's District 5, the special election. All the candidates have qualified more than we ever thought would, and half of them are here. Seven people in the studio today: Albert Cook, Allison A. Hewitt, Ariel Amara Danley, Audette Bruce is here, so is Carol, Carrie West, Daryl, Ashley Dudney, and Elvis Piggott. They join us here in the studio. It's going to be a two-hour show. We are not taking calls today, so thank you, guys. We're getting a lot of emails as well. I don't know if we'll get to these questions. The next question
thank
here.
Thank you, Ray. That was awesome.
Yeah, of course. thank you so much for supporting the station. District 5 has always had a black council person. This is the radio, but there are three white candidates on the ballot. Two of them are in the room with us today. The question is, do you think that talking about race...
Three of them are in the room.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. See, the radio's colorblind. And so am I. Sorry about that. Do you think that talking about race in the context of this race is a distraction? And additionally, for the black candidates, how would you feel if a white person took this seat? And for the white candidates, your candidacy itself means that you believe the seat can be held by someone who isn't black. Can you explain how you weighed the decision to run and why ultimately you decided to enter this race?
And we'll start with Audette Bruce, and you may or may not identify your race, if you wish.
Okay. You know, it's not the first time I've been asked that question. Audette Bruce, AudetteForTampa.com. And I think it's an interesting question, and I think it does bear some scrutiny, because I know it has been traditionally held by African Americans, but also I think, you know, most recently, obviously, by a woman. And I think that that combination is obviously a powerful voice to give to District 5. But I don't think that the problems or the benefits of District 5 are related only to race. Whether we are black, white, purple, green, the fact that we live in this area, we are experiencing it for ourselves, and we have the opportunity and really the burden or the purpose to get to know our neighbors and to be able to represent whatever color, because the majority of this area is just an amalgamation of all these different races. We can't say that it's only green or yellow, but it has to be all of us involved.
Thank you, Ms. Bruce. Carrie West, you're up.
Well, I've been in the area and I've lived in the area for, as I said, for 40 some years, and I believe that this is not an issue. I work with a homeowners association. I work with other areas out there with the barrio. I worked with other areas out there with Ybor development. I worked also with different areas and in working with historical preservation. And so to me, color didn't matter. In fact, I'm from the north, so that didn't really matter. And then I come down here and I just noticed that when I was going to school, that didn't matter. But to me, that's not a problem. The same problems are happening all over the district. We have an area that right now is kind of in a more blighted area. The only area out there that we really promote, you know, we promote coming to Tampa, but one of the areas out there when we promote coming to Tampa, here the area they promote is Ybor City, but yet it's the highest crime area right now. So I say right now, no matter if it's white, Hispanic, bicolor, black, Asian, we can be anybody we want to be.
Thank you, Carrie West. Ash Dudney?
Oh, it's an issue, you know, for sure. I mean, it's talked about, and it is, you know, I certainly got into this understanding that there were going to be some difficult conversations about that. So, you know, growing up in this part of Tampa, and especially my family's business the way it was, I feel like I would be a pretty solid representative. I mean, a good heart is a good heart. A good mind's a good mind. I do understand the need to see that representation, though, up there. So, you know, it is a difficult conversation to have, and it's tough to sum it up in 1 minute. But does it matter? Absolutely. You know, and, you know, that it, you'd be doing the issue a disservice by ignoring it and not at least acknowledging that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dudney. Elvis Piggott.
I say it's absolutely... it's an absolute conversation to have. Why? Because on the school board, you only get one black seat. City council, you only get one black seat. And also county commission, only one black seat. An African-American man will not have the privilege and the honor to represent South Tampa. You need, in reality, just as to speak of Ardette Bruce, speaking of the diversity of our area, let's be very clear that the voters of this district who've put these persons in this seat of District 5 is Precinct 329, Precinct 327, Precinct 325, which is 90% or more African American. When you look at Ybor City, when you look at Channel Side, when you look at downtown, why they need to be represented and is most definitely valuable, we cannot ignore that you need someone of color to represent. We can't talk diversity if you have a board that is all Caucasian. That is absolutely a disrespect and a dishonor and injustice to this city. And I think that should be most definitely dealt with.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Piggott. Albert Cook, same question about is race important for this district?
Ray, that is an incredible question. Albert Cook, leadership in action. And I'm a black man. I've always been a black man. And I vote as a black man, and I live as a black man. So when I look at politics and who is in place, I always want to look at, okay, who has the same living experiences that I have? And in this district, that would be someone who looks like me. I'm a black man, and I always will be a black man. And when I walk in the door, I'm a black man. We have a different perspective on things because we have different life experiences from everyone. So what I would think in this position, definitely there should be an African-American or a black man like myself, Albert Cook, but I would represent everyone because I believe that everyone should have whatever they need and whatever they want in life from our political representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Ariel Amira Danley.
Thank you. And we're going to get to know each other. It's Ariel Amira Danley, but I love that I get the opportunity to correct and get to know you. So, you know, District 5 has a proud history of black leadership, but at the end of the day, this race is going to be won by who fights for it the hardest. It's a conversation that's definitely worth having. And if we don't have it, then we won't be acknowledging the foundation that was laid by my ancestors, black people. But what we also need to be considering as it relates to diversity on our council is that if we need to be careful because we also will have only one woman up there, depending on how we vote. No black person up there, depending on how we vote. And absolutely no one representing the youth. And so this city needs to invest in our youth's future, and we need one that is not just mortgaged away before the youth gets a say. We're often called the entitlement generation, but we're just asking to inherit opportunity and not someone's bad choices. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stanley. Next up, Allison Hewitt.
Allison Hewitt, HewittWillDoIt.com. Yes, there should be an African-American on that seat. Tampa is a diverse community. And our representation should represent what our community looks like. My lived experience is a lot different than Dingfelder's lived experience. But we live in the same place, and we have the same values, and we love our family, and we want best for our community. But the people on that dais need to make sure that they are either having conversations or there's someone who can represent those different lived experiences. So we need to make sure, whether it's black or Hispanic, we need to make sure that we have the right people in the seat, the people who want to read and learn and understand the issues. We need to make sure that we, those people that we vote up there, are committed to the community and not to just the bright, shiny objects of development. We need to make sure we have people who are educated and want to educate themselves in this process. But we also need to make sure that the folks in that table are making sure they have their lived experiences brought to the table.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Mitch, you're up next. Mitch Perry.
A potential ballpark might or might not be built in District 6 in the coming years. We're a long way away from that possibly happening. But would you support having some taxpayer funds going towards that?
And Kerry, you're starting.
Kerry West. Yes, I do. I'll tell you what. A lot of people don't realize how much money peripherally the small businessmen and all the businessmen around the area through Hillsborough County and also the county surrounding it, plus the city of Tampa and also the areas where Temple Terrace do get. So one of the nice things about that is I would help and support it. I don't know. I would not go and jump in like I would have done with some of the officers that did for the stadium, you know, right down there at for the football stadium for the Buccaneers. That was a little bit too much and they gave in too much. But I would say, yes, we want to maintain, we want to have to be seeing our name out there. Just the advertising of Tampa for having Tampa Stadium, no matter what the name is on there, but it's in Tampa and also the broadcasting facts. I think that's a very good era. So I would say yes.
Thank you, Mr. West. We're going to go crazy in reverse order here. Audette Bruce.
Audette Bruce, Audette for Tampa.com. Can I give a qualified yes? In sense that it's such an unknown deal right now. There's so many unknowns, and I would want to make sure that whatever deal is struck, that it's in the best interest of Tampa, and specifically District 5, if it is in this district, and looks like it could be, right? But we've got so many transportation issues, job issues that need to be baked into that deal. So if it means that the city has to throw in some money, perhaps, but it really needs a lot of scrutiny, and I don't think I can give it a true weighing in a one-minute answer.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bruce. Allison Hewitt.
Thank you, Allison Hewitt, HewittWillDoIt.com. I believe that when economic growth is proposed in Tampa, especially for District 5, it really needs to be very tightly reviewed. We need to make sure that if that does happen, if there is a tax, who will be the most impacted by that tax? And if that tax will happen, understand, like we did with the stadium, what do we need to do to make sure the transportation is increased? And so clear communication with the community as it's being planned to make sure that if a tax happens, they know how it will impact them. They know ahead of time and make sure that the community is part of that conversation. Again, it's not tomorrow that it will happen, but the closer that we know that it may happen, we need to have transparency and communication with the community on how that would impact their bottom line and how we can make sure and make it work for everyone.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Ariel Amira Danley.
There we go, Mitch. Thank you. Too often, it's a delicate situation, right? And it's not a fast yes or a slow no. It depends on who's going to benefit from the deal, right? Too often, big decisions get made with no thought for who's left holding a bag. A CIT tax here, a stadium deal there, and suddenly our kids are stuck with decades of debt they never agreed to. And the people making those choices, by the time the bill comes to pass, they're retired with pensions and off celebrating, and the next generation has to pay the price. So that's not healthy leadership. That's kicking the can down the road. And I'm running because Tampa deserves better than expensive deals made behind closed doors. We need transparency and a seat at the table for those who will live with the consequences. The youth deserve a city that invests in our future and not just mortgages it away before we even get a say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Danley. And Albert Cook.
Another great question. Albert Cook, leadership in action. I played baseball as a young man. It was a great event, and it was a great sport to play. And what I've noticed in the past is whenever a stadium or a team leaves an area, it is lost. And they wish they had kept that team in the area. So we must look at this from the same perspective as the Cleveland Browns did when they let their team go to Baltimore, and they had to start a whole new team because they realized how much this team was not only to the community, but financially to the community and financially to the city. So I would definitely say, yes, we need to keep our baseball system team in the area. And we must do what we have to do to make sure that this happens. One of the things I think is a great idea, they're going to put a dome, a retractable dome over the stadium. So it's going to make it comfortable for us to watch games, you know, during the day and when it's hot.
Yeah.
Great question, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. And wrapping around here, Elvis Piggott, you're up.
That's a good question. Mitch, and I'm almost in the middle. I can't say yes and I can't say no. I can say what first thing pops up to me for being a District 5 representative is community benefit agreement. I want to find out how to do that benefit, because when we talk about raising taxes, if District 5, East Tampa, Sulphur Springs, just to, in my 1 minute to talk about also why black representation is necessary, if you don't believe it's necessary, look at Channelside downtown and then look at East Tampa and Zephyr Springs. Tell me somebody need to speak for that area. And so I most definitely would say clearly, to be very clear, that that community benefit agreement matters. You cannot continue to talk tax and we're still trying to find jobs for certain areas. You're still trying to get people employed. I think that's important. And before we can do anything with adding more burden to their lives, we need to first figure out how we can make their lives better.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Piggott. And wrapping up the baseball question, Ash Dudney.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all appropriately skeptical and agreeing on any kind of tax to subsidize a stadium. At the end of the day, the math has to add up, you know. Or is that an investment for the city, or is it a gift to development and to the new ownership is what it comes down to. I'd really hope that we have better communication with the new ownership versus how St. Pete did it, or how the Oakland A's, for example, imploded fantastically. You know, we don't need one of those coming to town. You know, hit up the Minnesota Twins and see how they worked with Minneapolis to make this incredible green stadium, one of the most sustainable stadiums in the league, and put it in a place that needs it. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about Ybor, but, you know, that dog track, as much as I love sitting there having a beer, you know, would be much better suited for Sulphur Springs to have a stadium put in there for the community. So, all right.
Thank you, Mr. Dudney. And go ahead, Mitch. You're
okay.
Up.
This has not gotten much publicity, if any at all, but the city of Tampa has signed a 287G agreement allowing Tampa Police Department officers to be trained to enforce federal immigration laws. Unlike counties, cities are not obligated by Florida law to enact such agreements. Learning about this now, are you supportive or do you oppose it?
All right. We'll start with Ash Dudney.
Man, Elvis was talking to my ear for the first half of that question.
I'm sorry. You take a
287G. So the City of Tampa Police Department has an agreement with ICE, essentially.
Oh, God.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Do you have the FCC list of fines right now so I can figure out how much I can afford to talk on this?
We'll bleep you. No, try to hold off on the customers.
No, I know. I use it like punctuation. Oh, my God, it's frustrating. It's ridiculous. It's inhumane. As somebody who has family that, you know, my great-grandmother came here from Mexico. She's Mexican Navajo Indian and was so ashamed of being Mexican way back then. She didn't speak Spanish again until she had dementia. When I'm down in the Everglades with my kid and we got to see a spray-painted thing that says, kill spicks, not snakes, you know, that stuff really gets under my skin. So how we are in any way supporting any of that ridiculous pageantry from federal, state, I don't care, but I'm going to stop talking before I swear.
Thank you, Mr. Dudney. Elvis Piggott.
Gosh, I could say one thing. I believe that everybody, as a city council, you know, a lot of this would be in the hands of the mayor and the chief of police, to be honest. They'll push that. I could say that I would advocate it from the city councilman that people be treated with respect and dignity. That'd be my stance on it, because, again, we don't have control over that. It's not like we can create policies and ordinance to stop or prevent. And so I will stay within my realm, but most definitely speak truth to power and ask that people are treated with respect and dignity. And that's how that's my stance.
Thank you. Before we go to the next panelist, Mitch, I got a question for you on that 287 issue. Is did it go to city council at all? Because
I've been
looking to see, do we even have one?
Yeah, you got it. You know, I learned this through going to the ICE website, and it was confirmed to me yesterday, actually, that this is true.
So Mayor Castor's signed something, but it didn't go to council.
The police chief, yeah.
Okay. All right. Albert Cook, you're up.
Albert Cook, leadership in action. Folks, I was appointed by Chief Burkaw to the chief's advisory panel. That's the panel that replaced the CRB. I am currently chairman. I sat in a meeting where Chief Burkaw actually discussed 287G. When I heard what he said it was, I couldn't believe it, but I can believe it now by what's going on. He said that he did sign that agreement, but it's not going to be enforced like ICE, where they're actually going seeking people out and then arresting them. Now, if you're pulled over and they check your ID and you show up and you're saying that you're not from here, then you'll be arrested. But other than that, they're not enforcing it. Now, should you get arrested? Look, if you're not supposed to be here, you need to have at least some kind of judiciary meeting where someone can tell you that, look, you have to go through this process. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Ariel Amira Danley.
Ariel Amira Danley, thank you for the question. This is a very sensitive topic. As a woman of color, especially, 287G lets local law enforcement work with ICE on detaining undocumented people. The first responders are already, you know, leaning on 60% of our budget with the responsibilities that they already have. So let's focus on those things. The East Tampa CRA talks about crime prevention through environmental design, better lighting, safer sight lines, parks that feel alive. That's what we're asking for. So that plan has not been updated since 2000. It was written in 2004, last updated in 2009. So we're kind of like bragging about Y2K in the year 2025, and that's a little outdated. We need to update it and put the old ideas through a new mind with fresh eyes, and build an intersection for youth and safer jobs and monitoring open data so residents actually see what is keeping us safe.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Okay, Allison Hewitt, you're up.
Allison Hewitt, HewittWillDoIt.com. One of my platforms is accountability. Now, because the council is a legislative body, we do the budget, and then it's up to the mayor to implement it. In that budget, it has the availability for the police chief to be able to enter into that. But it is up to the council to monitor it, to make sure they have accountability, to make sure they have transparency. So when we make sure, we need to read all the information that's provided to us to make sure we can prepare our questions, that we are communicating that to our constituents of what is happening in their area. But we are the legislative body that provides oversight as it relates to the budget. And if there is a budget request or a budget change to be able to supplement this, we need to say, well, what are you doing here? What is the report? We need to make sure if we're getting reports of something that is untowards, that we are having a public accountability for those type of actions.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Audette Bruce.
Thank you. Audette Bruce, when we're talking about illegal immigrants here in our country, there's already a problem. But when we're talking about our government not abiding by state or federal rules, we've got another problem, and that has contributed that tendency in our city to fight with state and federal government has created some problems for us, and some distrust and even some funds that have been retracted from the state. So it's something worth looking at and deciding, is this really going to be worth our while? Are we going to be able to make a difference if we were to fight it? I actually don't believe that we have the wherewithal to fight the federal government on this, but I would agree that we do have the responsibility as city council to keep a close eye on it. I have heard from Chief Burkhaw that he is committed to community policing. If that's really in place and we're seeing that we know our law enforcement and they know us, then that should dispel some of the issues already.
Thank you, Ms. Bruce. And last on this question, Carrie West, the 287G question.
Well, that's a problem, and that is inviting the city council members to go through and be advised and be aware, and because we're the ones that go and sign the budget. We work with the police department. We pay the police department. What the heck is going on? And I'll tell you what, one of the things out there is that, are we working with, and really, is it illegal to have people, the illegals that they say are in here, but then have illegal laws trying to go and round them up and send people back or over to countries that they don't even know? And a lot of the people might be here on different visas, but they still are rounding them up. We do not know how many people and how many people have left the country from down in the alligator in that area, Alcatraz, but other areas out there right now, and they want to increase this area. So I would say we should, the council needs to be fully aware what the mayor and what the police chief of Tampa have done and what have they signed, and because in District 5, they have a big area of immigration.
Thank you, Kerry West. I'm just going to give my two cents on this real quick. Is I do believe that council can't pass an ordinance. Council can't stop the mayor or the police chief from doing this, I don't think. That's my legal opinion. But I do believe that they could do a resolution, because a resolution is not necessarily binding on the city, but it sends a message from city council. That's my two cents. Okay, Ray Rowe, you're up next.
And if you're just tuning in here, we are going to be here on the last question here on a candidate form. The race for Tampa City Council District 5 has 13 candidates, one write-in. Seven of them are in here. And I was going to give you a harder question, but let's just do a softball, ask you to answer here in about 30 seconds so we can get in and out and make sure we keep our FCC license and all that stuff. Thank you, Ash, for that. All right, try to answer this in 20 seconds. What's the best thing you can eat in District 5?
All right, who are we going to start with? We'll start back with Albert again.
That's easy.
Albert Cook.
Albert Cook, leadership in action. That's easy. Cuban sandwich.
Where?
La Segunda.
Okay.
There you go.
Gosh, that's so tough, right? I mean, the best thing you can eat is at your grandmother's table, right? that home cooking. I mean, the matriarchs in my family definitely know how to take up space in the kitchen. So I'm gonna keep it at home for me. I'm gonna keep it at home with my matriarchs. I'm so happy that before my mother passed away, I was able to inherit some family recipes, and looking forward to getting involved myself. So thank you for the question.
And by the way, that's Ariel Amira Danley.
Yes, that's Ariel Amira Danley. Mitch is getting it. Yeah. Mitch is getting it.
John.
It's John.
Oh, John. I'm sorry, John. Mr. Dingfelder, I'm sorry.
Allison, what's the best thing you can eat in District 5?
Well, as third generation, there are several places. So anyone who knows me understands that my obsession with wings. So that would be Arbella's on 34th Street. But if I need soul food, I'll be at Mr. B's on Nebraska.
I'm getting hungry already.
Exactly.
Okay. Audette, what are you eating in District 5?
So I'm a big fan of Lucky Tiger. That's near my house. Excellent food. But I'm also a big fan of Meacham Urban Farm and getting real quality food into our neighborhoods.
Okay, Kerry West.
Well, I'm a big fan of the big Cuban sandwich. And wherever there's a good Cuban sandwich, I'll take it. And so that's what I say is in District 5, the Cuban sandwich. I've been in a lot of different Cuban sandwich competitions. And
Kerry, I'm going to press you. Where is the best Cuban sandwich in District 5?
I'll be grappled on that one.
Sorry, put you in a pickle there.
No, a German pickle. I have to say Columbia Restaurant.
There you go. Ash Dudney.
Dudney.
Whiskey, the hub.
Whiskey at the hub, your favorite food.
in this current climate, yes.
All right, Elvis Piggott.
I could say mine is, I'm almost wanting to second, home is the best, but I would say M&R's on Osborne, M&R's soul food on Osborne. Yes.
Okay. All right. I think everybody's got that one. On a somber note, speaking of the Cuban sandwich, we lost a great guy, Andy Hughes, the University of South Florida, who did a book on the Cuban sandwich. We lost him yesterday.
Yeah, rest in peace, Andy. Our thoughts are with his friends, with the USF Library community.
Ray, you want to wrap us up?
For sure. Guys, I want to remind you, this is just the first half of the show here. The Skinny will take over 11 to noon here. We'll have another batch of candidates. I really, really, really want to thank these candidates for coming out here today. They're pretty much out of form every day. Albert Cook is here, Allison A. Hewitt, Ariel Amira, Danley, Audette Bruce, Carol, Kerry West, Daryl, Ashley Dudney, and Elvis Piggott. Thank you so much for being on WMNF Tampa today, for taking time to speak to our listeners. I wish you the best of luck. I know that the next few weeks are going to feel like they're probably half a year long, but you're doing a great job.
Yep. Been there, done that. Summertime is the worst time to be campaigning, and you guys have survived. You got a couple more weeks. What is that? Early voting's already started? Is that right?
Early voting September 4th.
No, but there's election
day. The ballots are out.
Vote by mail is starting.
Yes, ballots
are out. These days, vote by mail is a big deal, right?
That's right. And that's a whole another show that I want to remind people that all of the candidates were invited today. In the second half, we will have two less candidates. So we'll have one, two, three, four, five in the room. Fran M. Tate confirmed she could not be here, and we weren't able to get in contact with Melanie Williams. But we appreciate a full panel here today on WMNF. We appreciate you guys supporting this platform here. And please, you're going to hear 5 minutes of NPR news here, and then we're going to get the candidates in and out, and we'll have a whole new set. We're going to ask a mix of questions that are the same. Some are different. Maybe we'll get one more softball in. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you on the other side of the NPR news.
Please join us for the next hour. We're going to have the next batch of candidates.
Thank you. The questions were fresh.
Well, that's these guys.
Thank you.
Hey, great to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you, Ray.
John, I'll see you guys.
Hey, Mitchell.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.